This is part two of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's short story, The Curse of Eve. It was heavenly for Johnson to have something to do and to feel that he was of some use to his wife. He ran swiftly to Bridgeport Place, his footfalls clattering through the silent streets, and the big dark policemen turning their yellow funnels of light on him as he passed. Two tugs at the night bell brought down a sleepy, half-clad assistant who handed him a stoppered glass bottle and a cloth bag which contained something which clinked when you moved it. Johnson thrust the bottle into his pocket, seized the green bag, and pressing his hat firmly down, ran as hard as he could set foot to ground until he was in the city road and saw the name Pritchard engraved in white upon a red ground. He bounded in triumph up the three steps which led to the door, and as he did so, there was a crash behind him. His precious bottle was in fragments upon the pavement. For a moment, he felt as if it were his wife's body that was lying there, but the run had freshened his wits, and he saw that the mischief might be repaired. He pulled vigorously at the night bell. "What's the matter?" asked a gruff voice at his elbow. He started back and looked up at the windows, but there was no sign of life. He was approaching the bell again with the intention of pulling it when a perfect roar burst from the wall. "I can't stand shivering here all night," cried the voice. "Say who you are and what you want, or I shut the tube." Then, for the first time, Johnson saw that the end of a speaking tube hung out from the wall just above the bell. He shouted up it, "I want you to come with me to meet Dr. Miles at a confinement at once." "How far?" shrieked the irascible voice. "The North New Road, Hoxton. My consultation fee is 3 guineas, payable at the time." "All right," shouted Johnson. "You are to bring a bottle of ACE mixture with you." "All right, wait a bit." 5 minutes later, an elderly, hard-faced man with a grizzled hair flung open the door. As he emerged, a voice from somewhere in the shadows cried, "Mind you take your cravat, John," and he impatiently growled something over his shoulder in reply. The consultant was a man who had been hardened by a life of ceaseless labor, and who had been driven, as so many others have been, by the needs of his own increasing family to set the commercial before the philanthropic side of his profession. Yet beneath his rough crust, he was a man with a kindly heart. "We don't want to break a record," said he, pulling up and panting after attempting to keep up with Johnson for 5 minutes. "I would go quicker if I could, my dear sir, and I quite sympathize with your anxiety, but I really can't manage it." So Johnson, on fire with impatience, had to slow down until they reached the New North Road. When he ran ahead and had the doctor open the door when he came, he heard the two meet outside the room and caught scraps of their conversation. "Oh, sorry to knock you up. Nasty case. Decent people." Then it sank into a mumble, and the doctor closed the door behind them. Johnson sat up in his chair now, listening keenly, for he knew that a crisis must be at hand. He heard the two doctors moving about, and was able to distinguish the step of Pritchard, which had a drag in it, from the clean, crisp sound of the other's footfall. There was silence for a few minutes, and then a curious, drunken, mumbling, sing-song voice came quavering up, very unlike anything which he had heard hitherto. At the same time, a sweetish, insidious scent, imperceptible perhaps to any nerves less strained than his, crept down the stairs and penetrated into the room. The voice dwindled into a mere drone and finally sank away into silence, and Johnson gave a long sigh of relief, for he knew that the drug had done its work, and that, come what might, there should be no more pain for the sufferer. But soon the silence became even more trying to him than the cries had been before. He had no clue now as to what was going on, and his mind swarmed with horrible possibilities. He rose and went to the bottom of the stairs again. He heard the clink of metal against metal, and the subdued murmur of the doctor's voices. Then he heard Mrs. Peyton say something in a tone as of fear or expostulation, And again the doctors murmured together. For 20 minutes he stood there, leaning against the wall, listening to the occasional rumbles of talk, without being able to catch a word of it. And then, of a sudden, there rose out of the silence the strangest little piping cry. And Mrs. Peyton screamed out in her delight, and the man ran into the parlor and flung himself down upon the horsehair sofa, drumming his heels on it in his ecstasy. But often the great cat fate lets us go, only to clutch us again in a fiercer grip. As minute after minute passed, and still no sound came from above save those thin, gluttonous cries, Johnson cooled from his frenzy of joy, and lay breathless with his ears straining. They were moving slowly about. They were talking in subdued tones. Still minute after minute passing, and no word from the voice for which he listened. His nerves were dulled by his night of trouble, and he waited in limp wretchedness upon his sofa. There he still sat when the doctors came down to him, a bedraggled, miserable figure, with his face grimy and his hair unkempt from his long vigil. He rose as they entered, bracing himself against the mantelpiece. "Is she dead?" he asked. "Doing well," answered the doctor. And at the words, that little conventional spirit which had never known until that night the capacity for fierce agony which lay within it, learned for the second time that there were springs of joy also which it had never tapped before. His impulse was to fall upon his knees, but he was shy before the doctors. "Can I go up?" "In a few minutes." "I'm sure, doctor, I'm very... He grew inarticulate. "Here are your 3 guineas, Dr. Pritchard. I wish they were 300. "So do I," said the senior man, and they laughed as they shook hands. Johnson opened the shop door for them and heard their talk as they stood for an instant outside. "Looked nasty at one time." "Very glad we had your help." "Delighted, I'm sure. Won't you step round and have a cup of coffee?" "No, thanks. I'm expecting another case." The firm step and the dragging one passed away to the right and the left. Johnson turned from the door, still with that turmoil of joy in his heart. He seemed to be making a new start in life. He felt he was a stronger and a deeper man. Perhaps all this suffering had an object, then. It might prove to be a blessing, both to his wife and to him. The very thought was one which he would have been incapable of conceiving 12 hours before. He was full of new emotions. If there had been a harrowing, there had been a planting, too. "Can I come up?" And then, without waiting for an answer, he took the steps 3 at a time. Mrs. Peyton was standing by a soapy bath with a bundle in her hands. From under the curve of a brown shawl, there looked out at him the strangest little red face with crumpled features, moist loose lips, and eyelids which quivered like a rabbit's nostrils. The weak neck had let the head topple over, and it rested upon the shoulder. "Kiss it, Robert, cried the grandmother. "Kiss your son." But he felt a little resentment to the little red blinking creature. He could not forgive it yet for that long night of misery. He caught sight of a white face in the bed, and he ran towards it with such love and pity as his speech could find no words. "Thank God it is over. Lucy, dear, it was dreadful. But I'm so happy now. I was never so happy in my life," she said. Her eyes were fixed upon the brown bundle. "You mustn't talk," said Mrs. Peyton. "But don't leave me," whispered his wife. So he sat in silence, with his hand in hers. The lamp was burning dim, and the first cold light of dawn was breaking through the window. The night had been long and dark, but the day was the sweeter and the purer in consequence. London was waking up. The roar began to rise from the street. Lives had come and lives had gone, but the great machine was still working out its dim and tragic destiny.